From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of March, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. We'll hear from agricultural economist Gary Schnitke about county yields in this state and across the nation. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, and we'll check out what you can do as a potential cooperator in the Moth Trapping Network with Kelly Estes from right here on this campus, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $6.33.5, up 3.5 cents. July at $6.11.75, a half higher. And December at $5.54.5, down 2.25 for the new crop. May soybeans, $14.48.5, down 18.5. July, $14.25, 23.5 lower. And new crop November, also down 23.5 cents at $12.72.5 a bushel. Bean meal, down $9. The bean oil, $1.60 lower. Soft red winter wheat in the July harvest month, 17.75 lower at $6.73.75. The hard red July at $7.99.25, down 7.5 cents for the afternoon. Crude oil at $70.57 a barrel, 89 cents higher, and gasoline up 4.7 cents at $2.55.4. Live cattle, $155.90, 25 cents lower. Feeder cattle at $198.77.5, 77.5 cents lower, and lean hogs for the afternoon at $89.35 per 100 pounds, they finished down $2 even. We're now joined by Greg Johnson from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, to talk about the marketplace for the day. Hi, Greg. Thank you much for being with us. It's not been a pretty week so far as it's related, especially to soybeans. The grains, of course, grains are following as well, but soybeans are really leading. What's happening here?
The South American harvest is progressing. Brazil is probably two-thirds harvested. Some of those beans are finding their way to the ports. Soybean basis down in Brazil has really weakened. It's actually weakened to the point where economically you could make a case for beans to be exported out of Brazil into the United States at a cheaper level, and that hasn't happened for several years, and hopefully it won't happen again, but that kind of tells you that our export pace is probably going to diminish quite a bit here as the Brazilians want to export beans, and China will probably buy beans from Brazil in the short run. So that's really what's pressuring soybeans versus corn and wheat to some extent. But overall, commodities are just under pressure today with the bank uncertainty, with all the banking issues. And then today, this afternoon, we have the Federal Reserve releasing their Fed funds rate, and we're waiting to see whether they keep it unchanged because of all the turmoil in the banking industry, or if they raise it because inflation is still relatively hot. So a lot of uncertainty. It's basically a risk-off day, and I think that's probably the biggest reason why we're seeing the sell-off that we are.
Here in the United States, if we had gotten to two-thirds done, the pressure would come out of the market. I think that's probably because we have such a good system to move soybeans very quickly into the export and other channels. Takes the Brazilians a bit to move soybeans out of the field actually to a port. Is that really part and parcel of what's happening too? There's some lag?
Exactly. Yeah, you hit it right on the head. A lot of beans get trucked to the ports, and the roads, there's one road, I can't remember, BR 151 or 147, or there's a major road, and I always see pictures this time of year, you know, about miles and miles of trucks backed up waiting to get unloaded. And so, yeah, it's not the quick unload and turnaround time that we see here in the United States.
Are farmers calling you today and saying, hey, what's happening and what should I do?
I think they've seen what's happened, and they don't want to, you know, out of sight, out of mind, I think is the approach that we're seeing today. So farmers are trying to do something else, I think, other than look at these lower prices. They're below the prices that they would like to get, and maybe they'll end up taking these prices at some point in time, but not in the middle of March, I guess.
Next week, USDA will release both the grain stocks. This will be Friday of next week, not this week, and the acreage figures. What do you think the corn and soybean acres will look like?
Well, the average trade guess is 91 million. I think that seems where, you know, now you can find anything from 90 to 93, but 91 seems to be where most people are shaking out at on corn. Beans more in the 87, 87.5 range, although there are numbers higher than that and some numbers lower than that. But that may be what the trade is expecting, but obviously what the government comes out with on March 31 could be something completely different. But that seems to be where we're anticipating the numbers to come out at. And then also we get a quarterly stocks report that day, and sometimes the stocks number is takes center stage over the acreage number. Although we all talk about the acreage number, sometimes the stocks number is a surprising number.
Anything that we should be watching there? What part of that do you want to watch?
I'm curious, when we get the monthly supply and demand report following this in April, if we see exports pick up. We've seen China buy a little bit of corn here almost every day for the last 5-6 trading sessions, but they're still basically just on pace for where they were last year, and that sounds okay. But our number three customer, Japan, and our number five customer, Colombia, are only half. They've only bought half as much as what they have in the past. So our export numbers are really lagging in corn, and we really need to see that number start to pick up on a weekly basis here for the next, you know, several weeks anyway.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM Total Grain Marketing. Now joined by Kelly Estes. She's the State Ag Pest Survey Coordinator here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. She's looking for a few folks to join the Moth Trapping Network this spring. It only runs for a couple of months. Thank you, Kelly, for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're hoping to find?
Every spring, we enact our moth trapping program. In the spring, we trap for blackworm and true armyworm. And then later in the season, we look towards other pests like corn earworm, European corn borer, and western bean cutworm. But what we're looking for early is cooperators that might want to monitor some blackworm or true armyworm traps. And that occurs from beginning of April through the end of May, first week in June, depending on how the planting season is going. It's actually a really easy setup. We provide traps and lures, and all we do is ask the cooperators to check the traps about three times a week.
So Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
That's the rotation I use, but people are welcome to check them whatever days they can.
Any parts of the state you're particularly interested in, or is this for across the whole of the state?
This goes across the entire state. This goes across the migratory program, migration of those migrations, and the perfect us monitoring. Usually we get reports out of the southern part of the state. Usually we get reports out of the southern part of the state. So usually we get reports out of the southern part of the state. Gradually move our way north and gradually move our way north. Generally following big storms that mean laws and big storms wind and rain and storms and things like that. But the most important part of the program is our ability to give monitor and track them to give us the potential to alert farmers black cutworm maybe active in their fields later in the spring.
Yes, I know how to look for them in the field and understand what the larvae look like. I have no idea what the moths look like. Are you going to help me out with that?
Yes, we have video calls for those that need photo guides and hands-on instructions. This particular trapping for blackcutworm and true armyworm is a little bit of extra help, but the great thing about generally trapping for blackcutt and black armyworm and true armyworm is that the pheromones are pretty specific. So the great thing about generally trapping in those traps are black cutworm and true armyworm. The pheromones are pretty specific. My daughter's been trapping and helping me with these. My six-year-old can army worms. So my six-year-old can army worms. Could do it several years ago. Several other states. It's pretty straightforward. And have a big database put into generates maps and things like that.
I can set cooperators up. If you make the counts, we work with several other states. But I also
and have several a big database that gets put into the accounts and it generates
daily,
maps and
whenever
things
they
like
check.
That.
Or
I can
even
set
every
operators up and
just
have
give
them
me some summarized data
all of themselves.
We are,
but I
also
are pretty flexible.
Have several
and can
people
make
that
just about email
work.
Me the accounts daily whenever they check, or even every other
if you want
week,
to give
me,
some
call
summarized data.
217-333-1005
just about anything
or you can
work.
Email
how do I pick
me
one of these traps up?
If you want to give me
number
a
8
call
at Illinois
at 217-333
I'll get you
1005
your address and information
or you can
and we
email
will be mailing those out
at
in the next couple weeks.
OOK and the number 8 at Illinois.edu. I'll get you your address and information and we will be mailing those out in the next couple weeks.
Hey, thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Kelly Estes. She's the State Ag Pest Survey Coordinator here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to participate in the moth trapping network, you can. Just contact Kelly at 217-333-1005. That's 333-1005 or email her at kcook8@illinois.edu. kcook8@illinois.edu. Gary Schnitke is now here, ag economist at the U of I. Hi, Gary. Thanks for being with us. You've written an article this week about the USDA figures that come out annually related to county crop yields. Can you tell me a little bit about those in a broad perspective to begin with as it relates to yield across the whole of the United States?
Yeah, so we looked at county crop yields, again, county corn and soybean yields. One of the things to note on corn, first off, is that we are below trend, significantly below trend, 5 bushels on the U.S. basis. And a lot of the below trend happened because of low yields in the Great Plains and the Mid-South. We actually had in Illinois above trend yields in many counties, and Iowa, particularly the northeast part, had above trend yields as well. So it was those Great Plains, Mississippi Delta areas where we had lower yields caused by droughts that brought our overall U.S. yield down.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what those county yields look like. Which county in the United States had the highest yields?
All right. So for corn, Elmore, Idaho had the highest yield of 247.3 bushels per acre. It's obviously not in the corn belt, but they did have the highest corn yield. We had exceptional yields in many counties in Illinois. And in fact, there were 10 counties that had average yields above 230 bushels per acre, with the headline being Stark County at 240.6 bushels per acre.
Yeah, and the difference between Idaho and here is that, well, we're rain-fed and they most assuredly were under irrigation. So that makes a big difference and shows the power of where we are geographically in the United States. What else did you follow as it relates to trend yields in the U.S. and the state?
Yeah, so overall, again, our trend yields for corn were above trend in Illinois for corn. And for soybeans, it was a much more mixed bag. While we had some counties with yields above 70 bushels per acre, actually 8 counties, and the headline yield there was Piatt County with 74.2 bushels per acre. And in fact, Illinois yields were the highest in the U.S. So Illinois soybean yields led the way. But even given that, most of our counties had near trend yields for 2022. It wasn't a particularly exceptional year for soybeans, particularly when you look at a trend yield based on the previous 20 years. Soybeans, again, were below trend. They had a 49.5 bushel average. Trend is 52. And again, a lot of those yields were brought down by South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, and the Mid-South, again, having lower yields. So the drought in those areas really impacted yields.
I have one more question. This one is crop insurance related, about the trend adjusted yield, because farmers have just come through that. They probably know what their trend adjusted yield is or have an idea of what that is. Can you tell me a little bit about not why the trend adjusted yield is in place, but how it's calculated and how farmers should view, for instance, the material that came out from USDA, their actual yields, and what the trend adjusted yield looks like?
Yeah, so for each county, there is a trend adjusted adjustment, which is something like 2.4 bushels per acre, 2 bushels per acre, well, maybe even 1.8 to 1.6 bushels per acre. That is based on historical data. Actually, it's the same data that goes into this article. Calculate trends for each county. Take into consideration weather events and geographical correlations, but it's basically a trend for the county. And then farmers are allowed to use that trend to increase their yields the further back they go in history. The idea behind it is to get our guarantee yield closer to what our actual yields are going to be. And in that, it helps quite a lot.
Hey, thank you much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist, joined us here from the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. We have a lot of ground to cover, Drew, I think, across the planet in the growing regions. Things have been changing some, particularly in Argentina. Can you tell me about rainfall there to start with?
Oh, yes. This last few days has generated some impressive rains. Actually, it started last weekend in southern parts of Buenos Aires. There was some substantial rains in the 1 to 4 inch range. That was in the southern half to 2/3 of Buenos Aires. We took a little break on Monday and early on Tuesday from that rain event, but now it has fired up again overnight last night. And throughout the day today, we have seen a substantial amount of rain now in central Argentina, extending from Cordoba right through Santa Fe, the central Santa Fe, into Entre Rios. And the Santa Fe and Entre Rios part of Argentina is right in the middle of the country, and it is the area that has been chronically dry for weeks, and where the top and subsoil has been rated very short, and crop development has been just terrible. And that's where a lot of the loss has come in recent weeks. Well, we have now got at least 2/3 of Argentina that's had a good drink of water, and the wetter bias will shift to the north as we go forward into the weekend coming up and maybe a little bit tomorrow. So the it looks like the drought is starting to ease. This is not necessarily ending the drought. It'll take a lot more rain than this to do that. But we are going to stop the decline in crop conditions. We've lost a lot of crop in the last few weeks, late season crops, and this will stop that fall. But it is pretty darn late in the season, and there's only going to be some late season soybeans and maybe some peanuts that will likely benefit from the rain. The peanut crop, which is mostly produced in southern Cordoba, has really not been as hurt as the other grains and oilseeds, soybeans and corn and sunseed and sorghum. Those are the big ones that have lost. Now, the late double crop beans are in Buenos Aires primarily, and they probably are doing better than these other crops. So this rain will help, but it is very late in the season. The crop is filling and will be maturing soon. So there'll be a little bit of improvement, but we're beyond the flowering stage, so we're not going to add any yield to anybody. And now there's talk in the marketplace, oh, well, is it going to get too wet for the harvest? So that's the next thing everybody will be worried about.
Well, speaking of that, has this rainfall in Argentina, is it part and parcel of what has been happening in Mato Grosso and parts of Brazil? They're a long way apart. However, there's been so much rainfall that they've been delayed in both harvest and getting the corn crop in.
That's right. It's been extremely wet in parts of Brazil. Mato Grosso, which is probably the number one Safrina corn producing state in the nation, did manage to get done with their field work a few weeks ago. But the states that have had the biggest problem here recently are to the south there in Mato Grosso do Sul. portions of Paraná and São Paulo. And those three states have had rain almost every day. I think every time they get a break, it lasts for 2 or 3 days. And it's not long enough because the ground is totally saturated. So the only way they can firm up is by, you know, evaporation. And it just hasn't been dry enough to really allow for any serious improvement. Well, we have now stretched together a number of days of drier weather. It started drying out last Friday. We're now multiple days down the road of lighter precipitation or none. And we're going to continue dry for another full week. So most of the unharvested soybeans will get harvested in this next week. And the same is true for whatever's left of the safrinha corn crop that needs to be planted. And I think earlier this week I heard a report that 91% of the safrinha corn had finally been planted. But about 20% of the total crop was much later than normal, which raises the potential that that crop will reproduce in a very dry soil.
The change of the seasons really do change things, both in South America and North America. A lot of precipitation coming across the mountains and in the snowpack in the northern and northwestern part of the Corn Belt. Can you tell me about conditions there and concerns you might have?
Yeah, you know, we've experienced some enhanced precipitation this year. In the Dakotas and Minnesota in particular, and of course, California, we don't want to forget them. The impressive snows out there and the rains that have occurred actually have their water reservoirs above their historical average as of this moment in time. And there's so much snow out there to melt that they're going to have to let go some of that moisture as it runs off. The reservoirs won't be able to handle it. That's something you don't hear about much. But anyway, in the meantime, a lot of those storms moved to the northern plains and northeastern plains in the upper Mississippi River Basin area and the Red River Basin area in the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota. And we've had storm after storm after storm going through that region, and it's been colder than normal. So there's been virtually no melting. And the snowpack up that way runs from 10 to around 25 inches, with a lot of that region having 10 to 25. So there's a pretty good chance that there's going to be some serious runoff when that starts to melt. Now, it's the end of March, or will be. We're going to be colder than normal through the end of the month, so there'll be virtually no significant melting. That means when we get into April, when the normal temperatures are warm enough that, if we get to normal, we'll have some significant runoff take place. And it looks like when we get into April, we'll have a pretty high potential that we're going to start melting the snow aggressively. There's also a potential that we may see additional rainfall during that time period. So there's a lot of folks talking about the potential for flooding across eastern parts of the Dakotas and Minnesota, and from there up into southern Manitoba, which is where that Red River flows. There's also potential for flooding in eastern parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin for the same reason. And the Mississippi River will be impacted by that. And right now, it looks like the Mississippi River is being predicted to have some flooding take place as we move forward through April, maybe into early May, depending on what kind of rain we get. I do not see this as a 1993 scenario. I think that the runoff will create some problems, but I don't think it's going to be epic.
One final place we might want to check in on. I know that the Indian wheat crop is in a stage that usually is vulnerable. Is there concern there at all?
Oh, absolutely. India's wheat crop had a little problem with a lack of precipitation during reproduction. That occurred in late January and February, and we came into the first week of March still dry. In fact, it was hot, and you probably saw some of the headlines about that it was hot and dry and that they thought that the crop was going to be reduced. Well, that was all fine and dandy, but as of last week, we started seeing rainfall abnormally, and there was enough precipitation across much of India last weekend that there was some rising concern about quality. There were some hailstorms, too, that did flatten a little bit of the wheat. The problem is that there's another wave of significant moisture coming up into India. Over the next 3 or 4 days, it's going to come through Pakistan first and then into India. And there's a lot of wheat in both countries that will be vulnerable to quality losses because of the rain event that already occurred last weekend, which has the crop already at odds. And now we're going to add another 0.5 to 1.5 inches of rain on top of that. India is normally absolutely dry and hot this time of the year, so all of this is very anomalous.
Hey, thank you much.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that at the website, willag.org, willag.org, or look the Closing Market Report up in your favorite podcast application. Our theme music for the afternoon is performed and produced and written by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.